Hello and welcome to episode 128 of the Nerds Assemble podcast.
This week, are all fans equal?
Hi, I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Cookie.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
And you can check out stuff to do the show over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk and, you know, tweet us right now if you want at Nerds Podcast. I think we're sort of trying this freeform news thing again. So
Jazz news
with jazz hands. Actually, that's kind of, no, don't do the jazz hands, Paul. We'll knock into the mic.
I've just done it.
No, get those hands away from the mic. I suppose one of the more interesting and surprising news stories of the past week has been the Nintendo DX and DNA news.
Yes, they're now going to be doing mobile games using their IP.
Mm. Well, I think in a way it's kind of weird.
It's about time
that they've previously obviously said that they've, you know, kind of disclaimed stuff from going into the mobile market. But by the same token, it sounds like these are going to be brand new games. They're not just going to be, you know, kind of ports from older consoles going on it. So it's a bit weird territory for them.
It's a bit odd. I'm really not sure if, you know, there's a particularly good reason for it, or whether they just think, well, maybe we can get a little bit of money and we can do something. Well,
that's what they need at the moment.
Kind of to the side. You know, of what they're already doing. As I've said before, something like a Pokedex.
Yeah.
There you go.
Or just, you know, more random free-to-play games. Because that's going well for them already with the Pokemon.
It's going to be it's Mario Runner.
I'm kind of annoyed that they announced this news because I still feel like they haven't given the Wii U enough of a chance yet. It's only this past year that suddenly they've had some killer games.
Yeah.
That people recognise the IPs of, like, just coming out.
To be fair, I mean, it doesn't sound like this new like mobile system and whatnot is going to, you know, take away from anything. And this, the new, you know, DX or whatever.
NX
is going to be called. That isn't going to become anytime soon. So, I think the Wii U's still got a little bit of life left in it.
Can I get in there with the joke about, you know, two Wii U gamepads sellotaped together back to back? It's not really news. It's like the whole thing. You go, oh, Nintendo are working on their next machine. That means they've admitted defeat with the Wii. No, Sony will be working on the PS5. Microsoft will be working on the next cheap crap laptop that they're going to stuff inside a console and pretend that it really needs Kinect 3. You know, it's just how things work. They always work on the next machine. So it's a bit like when all the news sites were reporting on every single hardware revision of the 360.
Yeah.
And saying, oh, you know, this and that, and people were going, oh, no, they're changing the hardware all the time. It's like, no, look up how many revisions the PlayStations and such had. All machines have had revisions to, you know, improve, reduce costs, use new technology, new manufacturing processes, everything like that. It's not new. Machines go through revisions, and console manufacturers are working on their next machine when their existing one, you know, is, well, in the case of the Wii U, it's you know, doing all right, isn't it, at the moment?
Yeah, it is. It's picking up sales, and it's got some really interesting games coming out for it. And there's already some interesting games that have just been out for it, so I think it's...
This is not even me saying it as well.
I'm gonna.
Don't forget the £10 goes into my bank account tomorrow.
I'll try and remember that.
I'm going to move us on to a slightly more interesting and unexpected bit of news from this week. Apparently, the female take on Thor has sold 25% more copies than Thor was selling in 2012.
That's
pretty cool.
That's good news, to be fair.
It's almost as if people were reading it because it could be interesting and not, you know, or it could be because this character is more interesting and because Brothol has always been shit.
I'm not sure if it was an actual line or if somebody had just changed the speech bubble, but I'm pretty sure I saw a screen clipping of one of the female Thor comics, which kind of told male former Thor, son of Odin, to bestill his man tits or something.
Calm thine tits.
Calm thine tits, yeah.
Calm thine tits, he said. She said.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, a few people were saying that's my new go-to JPEG. And there was also another one which I saw on Scans Daily, which I've never been sure if it's a good or morally dubious site when it comes to, you know, copyright stuff. But I saw a panel on that, which it was in blah 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 blah. It's about it's about ethics in something.
That's reassuring.
And it was okay. I wonder if they noticed that the you know, the movement that shall not be named had you know, said, oh, this SJW is getting in and spoiling comics again, and it'll sell even worse than the original Thor did, which is what makes these sales figures. Because I don't care about Thor.
No, we know that.
I do find it funny that it's selling more and being, you know, rather successful. And due credit to Marvel for doing something like this with a property that is current, where Thor Bro is in the films at the moment, and well, not only you know, Avengers, but he's got his own films. So, you know, that character is even more sort of accepted as, you know, he is Thor. So
yeah,
okay.
No, I'm really pleased for him, to be fair. I'll be honest, I've got a couple that I've bought and ready to read, but I haven't actually got around to read them, but it intrigues me.
But I think it's nice because, you know, this kind of criticism of kind of changing stuff has always been like, oh, think about the sales figures. Nobody will like the new stuff. And it's like, in actual fact, I tested it out and people did like it more than the original. So, I mean, by that logic of, you know, kind of giving people what they want, surely we should continue on with a female Thor if, you know, they're going by that logic.
Lady Thor. Or whatever. It's Thor, so I still don't care. I like the font they use for her dialogue.
Yes. That's like a kind of, it's weird, it's not cursive, it's like a, almost like a ye olde English kind of font that's kind of it's got like partial, like almost calligraphy, I want to say calligraphy, but not calligraphic, is that a word? Sort of like strokes to it, where like you've got like a straight edge where you might get with like a proper calligraphy pen, and then it kind of has like these curvy kind of flourishes on like the right hand side normally of the characters. So it's like the an M will start off like straight on one side, but then as soon as you get to the other parts of it, it kind of does these curved flourishes to finish the M.
Okay.
Basically.
Probably really annoying some font fans out there.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, typesetting demographic. It's a good demographic.
I'm not sure if most comics readers are particularly discerning of lettering.
Comic Sans. That's what they should all use.
I'm going to put my foot down. No to Comic Sans and everything.
Yeah.
No.
I mean, because
fuck no.
There's obviously, you know, this kind of backlash against Comic Sans. I mean, I've kind of you know, kind of read up about, well, I say read up, I've, you know, watched YouTube videos explaining about like typography and stuff like that, and it's like, it does make me wonder how many other people just hate it because it's part of the, you know, thingy, or whether they actually think that, you know, it is kind of a tired font. It, you know, it isn't really doing, you know, anything kind of different or saying anything interesting and whatnot. It kind of makes me wonder whether it's just like sheeples hating Comic Sans, or whether they do understand why Comic Sans is bad.
I just feel like somehow worming my way to the top of you know, a literary awards organization, and then giving out all the awards in Comic Sans.
Oh, do you know what? There is one aspect of lettering that annoys me that you're meant to do in lettering, but I don't agree with it, because no other bit of design really tends to worry about it. And that is that eyes standing by themselves in a sentence should be crossed eyes. You know, so it's got a top and a bottom. Yeah, a pattern in comics lettering. And it's like, no, because you tend not to write numbers that often in lettering. And then if you do, it tends to be a one which actually does have like a little nodule on the top or something anyway.
Yeah. Yes.
So it just seems really pointless. It's just this one little finicky thing, and it's apparently like the mark of like a professional letter. If, oh, you remember to dot your eye. Well, not dot your eyes, it's slash your eyes almost. And it's just like, I ain't slashing my eyes for nobody. If I see a line in the middle of a sentence, regardless of where it is, even in a comic, it's like, I know that's an eye. I'm not going to confuse it for anything else. It seems a rather pointless exercise.
You can tell by context.
It's like, does it make sense if it's anything other than an eye?
No. Well, then, the answer to most of this.
I mean, if it doesn't, then it's an eye. It's not that hard.
Sometimes it could actually make sense because obviously if you're using Queen's English, then I could actually be one. One loves you.
It's
There's lots of Regency comics.
Speaking of Regency comics, there was a Kickstarter announced by one of the people from Comics Alliance. She's launched an imprint. I think it's called Rosie something or other, and they're bringing out a romance anthology of comics from well-known artists and writers. And it does include at least one Regency set love story.
Bloody social justice warriors with their Regency periods.
And and at least one story that is centered around the relationship of either a lesbian couple or a pair of lesbians who are about to become a couple. And a lot of other sort of like cool variations on what love is and what it means, all from a female perspective. Not that you can say just like it used to happen in like, but before the heydays of ladies comics kind of ended in the West, because you had people like John Romita, was it Senior?
Yeah.
Creating a whole bunch of those. So you can't see really from a female perspective at that point. But otherwise, this is going to be from a female perspective.
I'm going to have to send you a link about the creator of Wonder Woman.
Uh-oh.
It's too much gnome to hear, but...
I saw it.
Yeah, Cookie knows what I'm talking about.
I take it that's not the button poetry thing?
No.
No? Okay.
It's a...
that was awesome.
Interesting. But right, so I think I would be remiss if I didn't. We finished talking about the comics.
Yeah.
Right. Tempest.
Oh yes. Tempest. And that certain thing that no longer really a games company is up to.
Yeah, Atari. Sorry, Atari. Air quotes. Atari.
Hey, is this about the casino?
No, actually. What happened was, this has been going on for months. They sicked lawyers on Jeff Minter for TXK on the Vita.
Oh, yes. I remember.
For a second there, I thought you said that, six lawyers.
Oh, sex lawyers.
Release
six
the hounds.
Lawyers suck. Yeah,
and we... Yeah, it basically utter bollocks. Now, quick, history thing here for because I've already gone through TXK a little bit in the past, but in the early 80s, Atari, who were mostly an arcade company at the time, they also had the VCS, but, you know, blah, blah, blah. But they did a vector arcade game called Tempest. And it used a vector monitor, and it was expensive, and blah, blah, blah. And it's, you know, well-regarded. So years later, Atari had the Atari Jaguar, and they...
Atari Lynx.
Yeah, I've got two of those.
Have you?
Yeah, I've got an Atari.
I've got a very good home for one of them here.
I've got an even better one. But, yeah, so Jeff Minter went to work for them and produced two games. One was Defender 2000, but the one that everyone remembers the Atari Jaguar for was Tempest 2000.
Yes.
Where he added a lot of stuff, like it's got a good, very 90s soundtrack. It's got things like an AI droid, power-ups, all these things the original one didn't have, bonus levels, saving your score as you progressed so you could get killed on the level and then return to it and pick up the score where you went off. So it was like a continue point, which, you know, it's used in subsequent games. But he's the one who made that game.
Yeah.
I think the details are he did everything in it apart from some bitmap graphics, which are on the title screen. Another guy did that. And a few other people, or possibly one other person, I'm not sure, they did the music. But, you know, the game itself is his. And years later, he's done TXK, which is, a spin on the game that he did. But, yeah, as it turned out, Atari, who have gone bust, been bought by Infogrames, pretty much gone bust again, and come back as a casino company, have decided, whoever's running it at the moment, they've looked at their list of things that they own and go, right, I wonder if we can make any money by suing the arse off, you know, these lot. It's basically doing a Tim Langdell with Edge that was going on a few years ago, where he was just going around copyright trolling anyone who used Edge.
Yes. And
trying to get them to pay up. Now, Jeff Minter has posted up, you know, some details here of the things that they accuse him of, and it's quite amazing. So he's saying, it looks like Tempest 2000, and these are their points. In order to create TXK, I must have had access to and stolen secrets from Atari's source code in order to steal the work of the other people who worked on Tempest 2000. And he says in brackets, I wrote the source code for Tempest 2000. I didn't need to refer to it at all to create TXK. And even if I still had it, the only people who worked on the game were Joby Woods, who did bitmaps. And TXK has no bitmaps apart from some 64x64 graduated dots. And Imagitech musicians. TXK has neither a mod player nor any of Imagitech's music. So I stole my own work from my own brain, I guess. Another point is, they say, the soundtrack to TXK sounds identical to the soundtrack of Tempest 2000. This is utter bullshit.
We need the elastic bullshit button.
Bullshit?
Yeah, bullshit. It's not. It has music. That's the similarity. They also say the player ship can jump. So there you go, Atari uns jumping. Nintendo must be bricking it.
Mario.
They also say there's an AI droid in TXK. He also points out that there was an AI droid in Llamatron, which he did 3 years before Tempest 2000. And he's saying, they say he deliberately set out to cash in on Atari's copyrighted Tempest name. As he says, what, by giving it an deliberately obscure name like TXK? And I deliberately set out to cash on Atari's stellar reputation by associating my name, my game with their illustrious name. As I never mentioned Atari at all, as the last thing I really wanted was for Llamasoft to be associated with the undead Atari responsible for turning Star Raiders into a fucking slot machine.
Oh! Wow.
Nice.
That's cool. As you can imagine, various other, indie devs and such are, you know, roundly on Jeff Minter's side. He made the game that you're accusing him of ripping off.
Oh, yeah.
With lots of elements that he created or, you know, started using, rather, you know, when it came to, like, AI draws, before Tempest 2000. So it's entirely bollocks. And they've gone on the record as saying, oh, we're disappointed. We were hoping we could come to a resolution with this. And he said, no, you sicked lawyers on me. It was entirely lawyers. No one from Atari ever talked to him. Because he said they would have been, you know, happy if Atari had said, we will take a certain percentage if you license it or whatever. And then, you know, it's resolved that way. But apparently, no, they were utterly uninterested in that. So as a consequence, they're trying to get TXK removed from the PlayStation Store. And he's had to stop development on PS4 and PC versions.
Yeah.
Because, as he says, if there's a possibility that TXK on the Vita might get pulled, what's the point of in continuing on the Never Never? He said in the future he would like to release what he's got.
Mm.
But he said even if he did it for free at the moment, they might just go after him anyway. So there's no point in him trying.
Oh, do you know what was so bad? Because I saw you'd posted on Facebook a reply to Atari's post on their Facebook page about the whole thing.
Well, my review.
And then it was just like, and then looking through at the time, it was about 60 comments. And Atari, like, in a PR way, have tried to disillusion themselves with the idea that people who know about Atari and the history of either game and anything about its existence, blah, blah, that they just don't know what they're up to, that clearly, you know, Minter's in the wrong.
Yeah.
Not their words.
We're just poor innocent Atari.
Yeah. And then just all the comments just ripping into them. It was beautiful. It's like, basically along the lines of, you motherfuckers are not going to pull the wool over our eyes. Stop fucking around. Like,
oh, you're saying he's ripped off his own damn game. It's like, no, you should be paying him money. Yeah. Because if it wasn't for people like him, you wouldn't have a name to trade on. Which
that's
is
all they do at the moment, is trade on it. They don't do anything else with it.
Yeah, that is all they do. They're basically just, you know, whoever has them now, because it's not the Atari that made these games.
No.
It's just someone who waltzed in and bought it from bankrupt stock. Yeah, and it already been through bankrupt stock once before. No, I think twice before.
Yeah, at least
so,
twice.
Yeah, it's a shell of a shell of a shell of a company. So, piss off.
Mm. Yeah. Totally.
The only thing that upsets me here is that they don't do anything that I can boycott.
That was a good point. I saw somebody else tweet that, be like, "Yeah, I want to boycott Atari, but
they don't do anything that I care about anymore."
Yeah.
And what had to make me laugh was, you know, the Nike Fitness app.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
That's on, you know, iPhones and such.
Mm-hmm.
Someone posted up screenshots of the Nike app next to an Atari Fitness app that they've just released.
Is it exactly the same, by any chance?
It's not exactly the same, but it looks very, very similar.
Mm.
Hmm. Different colour.
Mm.
Anyway, yeah, shower of arseholes.
Yeah. I think I don't want to go into this next piece of news too in depth. However, it's looking more and more like some X-Files is going to be filmed.
Yes.
I saw
that. Apparently they might be locked down for at least 2 seasons, I saw.
But I don't I don't think it's necessarily like the old length of seasons. Maybe. Fox would have to have a hand somewhere because they still own some of the rights.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. But I assume it's going to be like more like 12, 13 episodes rather than a full season's worth.
I wonder if they can get, you know, well, they'll have David Duchovny in it, but I wonder if they can actually get him to act.
Ooh.
Is that the gauntlet thrown down now?
I'm sorry. Well, I found.
Well, Gillian Anderson is
I'm
great.
I'm sorry. I found Duchovny's ass in Californication, as it was shown so many, many times, very convincing and well acted.
Could you tell it was his ass?
Yes.
Emily, is there something that you should be telling me right now?
Well, it's no, it's just that he's been depicted in various states of undress over the years. Just saying. I think he uses a stunt ass. Or other stunt things.
Yeah. Oh dear.
Emily?
It's just getting worse.
Yeah, it is.
I'm going to move on to what we've been up to.
Oh, before you do that, though, have you seen Rock Band 4 has been announced? And if the rumour's right, on April the 1st, the new Guitar Hero will be announced.
April 1st?
Yeah.
Oh, bugger, yeah.
Yeah. I already knew about Rock Band 4, having done an opinion piece for it up on Hex, going how I'm excited for it because I need a new rhythm game for this game console generation so that I can jam with Mimi Eats, and subject them to torturous levels of karaoke. However, what you perhaps haven't heard is that Harmonix are actually looking for song suggestions to get hold of onto and add to the already existing extensive song library. The new game, it's going to work out that the songs that are in the existing catalogues, which were pulled offline, so you can't buy from them anymore, last year, it's something like 3,000 or more songs. But anyway, over the course of several DLC packs, which will somehow, I assume, be tied into whatever accounts you've got with Harmonix for Rock Band, people who already bought all that will be able to get those songs back into the new game. And obviously, those of us who didn't have those songs, because like, we had Guitar Hero, will be able to like buy songs that we want.
You can just imagine some ardent Rock Band fans going, filthy people, their Guitar Hero.
So far.
That's what it felt like at the time.
I will try and get the link for song suggestions onto the show notes. I have suggested one song so far, and that is Smooth Sailing by Queens of the Stone Age, which they definitely don't have because the album that's from was released after they stopped adding to the games.
Cool.
I want the separate soundtracks of TXK and Tempest 2000.
that's the thing. There's this tendency with games now to kind of reference other people's stuff. So I reckon it would be actually kind of cool if they went to a couple of indie developers and say, hey, can we have your music?
Yeah, but it's got to be something that will work as...
with the game.
Yeah, because there's a lot of stuff that wouldn't.
Mm. Did they ever get around to putting Flight of the Conchords in?
No idea.
No, don't think so.
I'm just hoping that they get a bit of... because I've never really played Rock Band 4. Rock Band 3. Played
that was good.
Once over someone's house, I think, briefly. But I didn't have long enough go on it to get used to it, because obviously it was a tiny bit different to Guitar Hero, which I played far more.
I used to play the drums and guitar. That was cool.
I'm gonna move us on to what we've been up to.
I will just nip in there very quickly. I was reading that possibly half of the staff at Evolution Studios, responsible for Drive Club and MotorStorm, have been laid off.
Oh no.
Yeah, so I'm not exactly sure what's going on with that, because I would have thought that have a lot of people working on DLC and possibly other things.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose it's not an incredibly good sign that we haven't opened up our copy of Drive Club yet.
Mm. Well, I have a few mates who play it, and they swear by it. Not at it, but, that was when it started off and the servers were crap.
It does seem like...
They swear by it now.
It does seem like nowadays with, AAA kind of video game development kind of scene, it doesn't matter how well a job you do at a game, there's still major risks of being laid off once the project's out.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, there's the whole thing of, I know that the whole problem with, working at a game dev like this is that once a big project is over with, then most of the staff will not be required unless they're going to go straight on to the next big thing that they're working on. So, you know, there's always, almost always going to be people laid off at the end of, games development, but it's a little bit worrying.
I have to say, you don't hear about that with, Nintendo stuff.
No, that's...
That's because they just have Miyamoto in a cage.
No. No. What they do is the staffers they don't need to use in between projects get put back inside their Pokeballs.
Got to catch them all.
Yeah. See? It's fine.
So you reckon during like Nintendo game design, right? So it kind of comes to the part where they have to design the GUI and they get specific people in Pokeballs and
with like full on stats, like game dev story by was it Curiosoft was partially telling the truth. You know, each member of the development team has various stats and abilities. It's true. It's truer than you think. Mm, totally.
So. Have they just lost the Pokeballs that have the Metroid Prime for Wii U using the gamepad as a visor designers and lost the bloody F-Zero devs as well?
Well, yeah, well, unfortunately.
Just put them in a drawer or something.
I mean, don't forget that as the cartoons
they put
of,
him in the pocket of the coat at the dry cleaners.
As the Pokemon anime clearly demonstrates, Pokeballs are not always in their fully formed size when they are not in use and being carried or contained in like a bag or something. They are actually shrunk down in size to a size which is perhaps possible to lose in various locations and never be found again.
You're not a very good trainer if you lose them, though, are you?
Well, no, obviously.
I mean, losing your Pokeballs kind of sounds like you're going a bit crazy there.
I would argue that you're not a very good developer if you somehow don't use two of the properties that you own for your consoles. That would be perfect for them, and I would buy in a heartbeat.
To be fair, I don't know why Retro Studios was put on Donkey Kong, but Donkey Kong
I want to know what they
worked,
did, because they must have done something.
But, I mean, they're obviously meant to be working on something.
I don't care if it's good or bad. It's just the fact that they're not working on Metroid Prime.
Unlike most other developers, they they seem to kind of hold out until development's almost done before announcing projects. Mm. Other developers, do it at the start of the development cycle.
And now we are moving on to what we've been up to.
And one more thing. No, I'm just kidding.
I will tag you with this pen. I will. I know how to use it.
And as she attacks you, she'll realise that the Pokeballs have been lost in the ink.
I have to say, our news section is sponsored by Columbo.
Retroid, what have you been up to?
Well, I've been playing Elite Dangerous.
Oh, yeah?
No.
Now, let me paint you a picture.
Here we go.
Space, final frontier.
Well, I've been very carefully saving up, doing supply runs, missions, bounties.
You've been hustling.
All of these things, legally, I may add, in the game universe.
So not in real life, okay.
I'm a kingpin in real life. But, I've been doing all these things, including, buying new ships when I can afford them, upgrading them, increasing the jump capability, defensive capability, all of that. And it led up to this weekend, I finally managed to get enough money together after selling the two ships I owned. One of them was a heavy transport, which is basically just like, cargo with an engine. And the other was a rather nippy little explorer called an Asp. I saved up enough money, I sold those two ships, and I bought a Python. A Python is a rather big, impressive ship, which is nippy. It can be armed to the teeth, but it's also got the same amount, actually slightly more, cargo capability than my cargo container ship had. And beautiful thing. I posted, some screenshots of it, rather nice. You could look around the cockpit and it was all...
Are you bragging about your Python?
In fact, what I was thinking more was that it almost sounds like you've got something like, was the ship in Firefly called Firefly, or was it called something else?
It was Firefly Class.
Firefly Class.
Serenity.
Yeah.
So, all of this, and I thought, right, I had some money left over, but I thought, no, I need to make sure that this is, properly armed. So I bought some, big guns for it and, mounted them on it, made sure they're all coordinated. That's all fine. Bought enough cargo to start making some of my money back. Everything's great. So, travel to another system. And there's a nice strong signal just on my approach to the station.
Hmm.
I thought, well, I'll nip in on that. I'll see what it is, because if it's pirates, I'm in a nice heavily armed ship now. I'm fine. So,
famous last words.
I dropped into, out of frame shift drive into normal space in there. And there were a group of ships, something like half a dozen. And several of them were wanted. So I thought, right, I'll attack. So I did, and it was going well, and I managed to destroy a few of them. And then some of them managed to get in a lucky shot on my cargo door, which meant that all my cargo was spilling out into space, and my cargo door was stuck open.
Ouch.
In the meantime, while I'm dealing with that, I've got several of them fighting me and, picking bits off. I try to frameshift drive out of there to save my ship. I can't go into frameshift drive because my cargo door is open, my cargo hatch. And I'm just sitting there trying desperately to divert energy to the shields, which have been knocked down. My ship's being picked apart. My canopy blows out into, deep space. And, computer's saying, critical failure. And I've got about, 8 minutes of air left. I can't escape. Ship gets blown up.
Ouch.
And then the screen comes up saying, these are your options. This is the cost of insurance to get your ship back. And it was 2.6 million credits.
Jeez.
I had 6,000 credits. So after all these months with a big, massive ship that I'd got, my only option to continue the game was to drop back into the Sidewinder, which is the lowest of the low, ship. All my money, all my ships.
Ouch.
You know what? It almost sounds like a tale of woe that could have been said by a spacefaring Captain Jack Sparrow.
And that's why I drank.
Don't blame you.
That's why I have no cider for this evening's podcast. Or rum. I had it when that happened.
The rum's gone.
I'll just find the rum planet.
I am looking forward playing that when it comes out on the Xbox One and PS4 later this year.
Is it? Yeah. Is it a nebula or something that's actually made of beer, technically? You need to find the nebula made of beer and just grab a load of that and go sell it.
Or just lay down.
Yeah.
That is actually your real thing. Yeah. There is a nebula out there.
I'm sorry for your loss, Retroid.
Mm.
It was quite hard. I've not played it today.
I'm unsurprised by this after such a dramatic setback.
I have found... and I wasn't even in the same system I was in as well. I was dumped back into Federation space, which I'm unfriendly with. Whereas I'm allied with the Empire and everyone likes me there.
Joy.
So I've basically gone from a luxury military jet to a Mucklud.
Wow.
To a Cessna.
Yeah.
Wow.
Ouch.
we might need to start a elite dangerous Alcoholics Anonymous style group or something. Introduce a kind of 12-step plan,
maybe. For people who have lost their pythons.
Yeah.
I will
start a Kickstarter for credits on Elite Dangerous.
I saw a Kickstarter today for Cubes of Metal.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wait a minute. Cubes of Metal?
Literally. But you can own several cubes of tungsten.
Wait. Are we sure that... wasn't there a Doctor Who episode about this?
What, the ones that count down?
Yeah, I'm just saying, mate, no, don't support that. Don't, no, that's just how they want it. No, don't do that. No.
I'm presuming that that isn't actually what is being done on Kickstarter.
I'm sorry, so somebody's trying to sell cubes of, no, that sounds like a bad idea.
I don't know what the whole idea of it is, but yeah, you can contribute to a Kickstarter and you can get cubes of metal.
No, don't.
Maybe if I get enough of them together, I can build a real Python.
Yeah, that's an idea.
I don't think it sounds safe or not enough, unlike a Doctor Who storyline. That's what I'm saying. Cookie, what have you been up to?
I've been playing a little bit of Titanfall.
How is it?
I've become addicted.
Is it stompy bang bang boom?
Pretty much, yeah. Pretty much. Down to the knee, yeah. And I like stomp, stomp, boom. Yeah. No, it's actually, I'm quite enjoying it. I'm actually playing it more than Call of Duty, but I'm playing multiplayer at the moment, which is bizarre. But no, it's good. I really enjoyed it. I'm enjoying it. It's all totally multiplayer. There is a campaign, but it's all based around multiplayer missions. And you actually get the little cutscenes in the view and your HUD in the corner, just to keep you up to date with it, which is a nice little twist. It's a shooter. It's very fast. The wall running is ace. Jumping from wall to wall and just being able to jump up the wall and do double jumps. That's good fun. That adds a little bit of mixture to it.
Yeah, Atari's going to come after them.
Yeah. It's got jumping in.
Oh, well. Let's see what they do with it.
If it's got R-ups as well. Hang on. Does it have music?
Yeah.
Because that's probably identical to Tempest 2000s.
It has funky music.
If you can't tell Atari, I'm taking the piss.
Atari.
Did you pick up the free season pass?
Yes.
So have I.
Oh, yes.
I don't own the game, but I picked up the free season pass. Not
what?
Well, yeah, because to celebrate the year's birthday, Respawn released the season pass with all the DLC free of charge.
Yeah, so my Origin,
which I thought was really good. That's one of the reasons I actually picked it up, because I saw it going quite cheap in a shop, and I had some games to trade in anyway.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, Titanfall, that's quite cheap. Oh, season pass is free at the moment as well. Oh, this sounds like a good idea. So yeah, that's what I did. But yeah, it's... What's interesting is it's very... What I like about it as well is you can't really have campers on it that I can see.
Mm.
There was one particular match I was quite enjoying where I saw that there was somebody trying to camp on the sort of third level window, and I just double jumped up to the window and kicked him in the face and knocked him to the ground and killed him.
Yay!
And I thought, hang on, this works. Yeah. And then, of course, you've got the big robot that comes down. You can jump in there and just blow things to bits with big cannons and rockets and all sorts.
Is
and the melee
theme
attacks.
Song for this game, Boom, Boom, Shake, Shake the Room?
Unfortunately not. I think they missed a trick on that one.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure who holds the copyright to that. I don't think it's Atari, so they might have had a chance.
There is something nice about just your description of, you know, kind of, oh, you can't camp because otherwise you'll just get kicked in the face.
Yeah.
Well, you'll either get kicked in the face by another player or kicked in the face by a mech.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, if you plan it really, really well as well, like as I found out the other day, I managed to build up, cause you have to build up your, you don't get the mech straight away, you get it after you've done so many kills, and you keep getting reports of when it'll be ready and that. So I did it the other day and I got it ready and I pressed the button to call the mech and it'll go to an area where it's suddenly going to drop and it says prepare for Titanfall. And I saw this mech come down, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to get ready to enter that. And then there was this bad guy who just came running up. And the mech just landed on him, and he got scratched. And I was like, hang on, what? Awesome. Even better. And I just jumped in the mech and started carrying on. Which is cool. But yeah, it's been pretty good.
I just love it if you could do that with other games as well. It's like, you know, playing a match of Left 4 Dead and suddenly the tank charges at you, and just this giant mech falls down on him.
Yeah, that'd be cool, wouldn't it?
That would be quite
a little mod. Yeah.
I could just imagine an evolved Titanfall crossover right now where the team of hunters decides they've had enough. Just call this mech down. Well, the bastard like, that's trying to
well, like
kill
Alien
them.
Isolation, you know. Oh, like yeah, yeah, skulking yeah. about the alien, and all of a sudden, just giant mech.
I mean, another little perk to it as well. Well, plus side, there is a real strategy to it, because your mech, you can jump into the mech and auto pilot, or you can have the mech on autopilot in two modes. First one is follow you, and it'll follow you and just take out the baddies around you and attack other enemy titans, or guard, and it'll just guard that position for you. So there is, you can add a little bit of strategy to it as well, which I found quite interesting.
Because
I must admit, I was running around like a banshee the other day, and I just had my mech on follow me, and he was just taking out all the enemies for me. I was just, yay, shoot me. Oh, you're dead.
I do like games where you can actually tell like computer control players to kind of go ahead or stay back, hold position, and that type of thing. That yeah. is, you know, that's I love being able to do that in games.
It's well thought out, I think, to a degree, to be fair. And then, of course, the nice icing on the cake is they have announced, well, they will be announcing Titanfall 2, I'd imagine, because somebody at EA's already said that they are working on it, because they're going to be doing a first-person shooter every year, apparently.
Well, it is EA.
Yeah, and Titanfall 2 will be coming out on other platforms like PS4 and that, though, as well. It won't just be Xbox exclusive.
Okay.
So that'll be cool.
And PC.
And PC, yeah. Sorry, and the PC. I forgot the PC.
Paul, what have
not
you
sure
been
about
to?
Wii U, though.
It will not be
probably
on Wii U.
Probably not.
Paul, what have you been up to?
Well, earlier on today, I had this inkling to watch a little bit of The Universe. That's a documentary series from the History Channel, just in case you want
to. So what, you just looked up?
Well, but...
Did you see the eclipse?
I didn't know. I was in bed sleeping.
I noticed the sky get slightly darker as I sat at my desk, uninterested in the whole thing, having been, you know, in Cornwall in 99 and having the, you know, ridiculous amounts of people down here hoping they catch the damn thing, and it was cloudy. So I was done with eclipses when I was 13. I was pretty much like, yeah, they can go fuck themselves. I don't give a damn.
I'll just pour a packet of Jaffa cakes.
Yeah, that sounds like the best thing to do. Jaffa cakes. Totally clips.
But anyway.
Oh yeah, sorry, Paul. You were watching The Universe.
Yeah, I was. Yeah, it's.
With bits of my Python flighting bastard.
What are you on about? Paul was the pirate that took you out.
Damn it! You've given me up.
You killed my father. Prepare to die.
But no, with The Universe, it's a documentary series. It's been around for quite a while now. Let's say, obviously, post 2005, I think. I was watching like the last couple of episodes of season 4. So that's, I think that's where I got up to previously, and you know, looking at like space wars and how wars would actually be fought in space. You know,
cool.
if that happened, and yeah, it's remarkably different from anything that you see on, you know, any sci-fi series,
yeah,
whatsoever.
I'll just weep at you.
But no, I do kind of like the presentation to a certain extent, because it has like you know, kind of interviews with, you know, kind of actual scientists who do explain stuff, and then it has fancy graphics and, you know, easy to understand stuff and blah blah blah. But I think they do have a tendency to use slightly inappropriate language when it comes to stuff, and I don't mean inappropriate as in kind of swearing and effing and blinding or anything like that. I mean kind of like completely understating stuff, so that they'll kind of talk about, you know, kind of like a, you know, another planet's atmosphere and whatnot, and it'll be like, oh yes, and you know, the rain there is like you know, kind of almost like molten iron, and then they'll turn around and say, oh, and it you wouldn't have a very good day if you stood there. And it's like a complete understatement.
It sounds like that Fascio character, you know, the, which was nice. You know, just describing something. Yes, I came up with an idea and I gave it to the company, and it was such a success that I was made CEO and multimillionaire. And now I've retired and I can do anything I want, which is nice.
It does feel a lot like that, actually. Because, you know, they will say something, you know, about that, how inhospitable kind of a place is. And then they'll turn around and say, and, you know, if you're kind of vacationing there, then, yeah, it's not going to be very nice for
Maybe
you.
Maybe it's some kind of weird form of being modest.
Yeah, I think it might be that, actually, yeah. I do quite like, I mean, from UK standards of kind of documentary, it does have a lot of cheese in there. And yeah, it's something that's obviously kind of designed more for the American audience because of that cheese. You know, you don't generally tend to get that kind of thing on UK TV.
Well, you're saying UK factual TV.
Yeah.
I had issues with the level of cheese in the new series of Cosmos.
Okay.
Because I thought that, you know, it's like, yeah, I enjoyed the series, but I don't necessarily want all this, oh, isn't it nice? Mm. And sort of reenactments of things. It's like, no, just tell me.
But I mean, you know, some things they do quite well, like how they actually explain stuff. But then it has these kind of weird Americanizations about stuff. Like, say, for example, you can tell when something's designed to kind of have a break in, or like commercial break, as the Americans would call it. So they'd be like, oh, and, you know, they'll have like a couple of snippets about what they're going to discuss next. And then it will get to the other, get past the break, and it will just kind of have a couple of snippets about, you know, what's going to come up, and then it will kind of get back into the
Maybe
show.
Maybe the disc versions could have been edited a bit more.
It's very possible.
Speaking of editing,
definitely sounds it.
Speaking of editing, haven't you been editing something else?
Yes, I have actually been video editing a little bit for our film that we've entered into a competition.
Yeah, we've entered a 90-second short film competition. The film was 89 seconds long.
I mean, I don't want to get into too much detail.
Yeah.
I
don't know either.
Yeah. I just love, you know, kind of video editing, and like each time I do it, I seem to kind of re-explore kind of new ways of doing stuff and changing a focus on, you know, because previous projects, you know, it's been sorting out like ADR or, you know, automated dialogue replacement, and this time it's been far more sound effects heavy, so I've been kind of dealing with kind of not just kind of capturing sound effects, but also kind of adapting them and editing them to actually make
celery
it more...
was hurt in the making of this film's sound effects.
Good. I don't like celery.
To be honest, I took one celery stick, and it's very good for kind of crunching bones kind of sound. So, you know, I did one crunch, and then I started kind of doing a couple more, you know, different kind of velocities and whatnot to, you know, give me a range of what I can actually kind of deal with on there. And, yeah, that was actually probably one of the better sound effects that come out. they're obviously kind of the kind of footsteps and like heavy breathing, that was fairly easy. And yeah, it's amazing how much of an impact sound has on film. It really is, especially like with sound effects.
Definitely.
But anyway, talking about kind of the universe and editing and blah 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 and whatnot. Emily, what have you been watching?
And you know what I've been watching? At the same time, though, that first one has nothing to do with space. I watched a 1995/1996, depending on where you look, film called Lone Star, which I just happened to find in my parents' Radio Times the other week. And I was like, oh, I want to record that, because it had a very young Matthew McConaughey in it.
And it's got nothing to do with Spaceballs.
Nothing to do with Spaceballs. It's a sort of... It's a crime, well, not really a crime, it's a drama with elements of sort of like rural crime and stuff, and it's about a small town that's slowly thrown towards the brink of turmoil after a law enforcement officer's skeleton is found out on a former military shooting range. And
awkward.
Yeah, and it's kind of like, how did the body get there? Whose body is it? Because a badge was found with the body. And it appears that the body was a sheriff of the town at some point in the past, like, 50 years or something. Mm. And it's like, it's the film sort of like slowly investigates, it follows the investigation, then sheriff. So he investigates the body and tries to find out whose it is and then how the death happened.
Cool.
And it explores various tensions in the local community because it's actually set in a corner of Texas near the Mexican border.
Right.
And there's lots of racial tension between people who are from Mexico, or obviously, you know, cause obviously part of Texas used to be part of Mexico until that, you know, that war thing happened.
And then from Texaco.
and other ethnic groups like the local African American population. There's like a small group of them there, and there's like tension between them and obviously because there's most like a lot of the people there are just regular like Caucasian Americans, and they're the majority, and they tend to divide and conquer, at certainly in the past, like the other ethnic groups in the area. It's just kind of weird how the investigation sort of like digs up all these old tensions, which is still slightly there today, but only with white people, apparently.
Well, everyone else have kind of learnt to cooperate and
along. Yeah, and get along.
Sounds about right, to be honest, actually.
Yeah, but it was actually quite a good film. It's a long watch, and it's not something you watch for the fun of it. Matthew McConaughey's role is actually kind of minor, but it's kind of weird seeing him act in such a serious role at such a young age. So, and the other thing, I did catch up with some season 2 of Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I'm not
just watch the first season of that. So
yeah, I really like the first season, but I'm not sure what I think of the second season so far.
The second season is interesting because they've kind of decided to go with this kind of overarching kind of narrative, which is kind of the formation of a. Actually, I shouldn't say anything because
a particular team within the precinct.
Yeah,
yeah.
So there's going to be an arc story arc. For those who haven't watched the second season,
Retroid. Hello.
Yeah. I haven't been as impressed with it as I was the first. It's not horrible TV. It's just not catching my attention as much as the first series did.
I think part of the problem is that all of the characters had developed up until this point, and there hasn't been like any kind of brand new. Kind of characters involved, yeah. So it feels like the characters kind of come quite a way, with the character development. But it's kind of getting stale because they're not introducing any more characters yet. So once they swap out like a character or, you know, add new dynamics in, I think it will start to improve a little bit again.
I'm gonna move.
Which is fans of feet.
Can I
just very quickly?
Maybe.
Because I
might have to
that.
Throttle you.
That, you know, that's a weekly occurrence.
Considering what's happened to his python, come on.
I'm still mourning.
I got you back.
But, we watched Ender's Game.
Oh, yeah.
Over the weekend.
Okay.
Is that an indication of what you think of it?
I've been avoiding it. Watching it, though I have read the novel.
Yeah, I haven't read the novels, but
it wasn't too bad.
I could see issues with it well before certain things were revealed. And certain things made no sense to me. Well, actually, quite a few things made no sense to me. Like, but the first half of the film could have been, you know, very quickly condensed into flashbacks or just explanation. And the latter half to, you know, last third could have been massively expanded. I'd have been far happier with that. It would, it's something that looks like, it feels like, it would have been much better as a TV series. And with Paul mentioning earlier about how space battles would work in space because of the laws of physics, Yeah, it reminded me, because I know the general story arc of the Enders, you know, books.
Mm.
And one of the things which appealed to me was that they treat relativity as something which is a serious concern. So why the hell in the film did they suddenly go from this space station over Earth to a planet near these, you know, alien bugs' homeworld? And you say, oh, we've got to hurry things up, so let's go into hypersleep and, you know, travel there.
Yeah.
You say, even if you travel at the speed of light, that's going to take a while. So if there's all this, you know, big rush to actually get things done, and it was a stupid idea, I'll just say that, then, yeah, there are a few things that bothered me with the science of that.
Yeah. Are we done talking about Ender's Game?
Yeah, that's it. That it just reminded me there. It's like, okay. Oh yeah, I got disappointed by something else.
All right, I want to move us on to a final bit of this episode. We were going to discuss for a little bit a question that has arisen sort of reading around and still based off various issues to do with things like the concept of fake geeks, specifically fake geek girls and things like that. But the question is, are all fans equal? Last month on a corner of Reddit, somebody posted about how fandoms, different corners of fandoms, and the different peoples within these fandoms tend to handle their fandoms. Mm. And I want to read this before we start the discussion. Okay.
Okay.
This is a long thing.
So Lord Bryonic said, note, the following has hella generalization. If you feel like this doesn't apply to you, congratulations, let me slow clap it out. Then he gets to large fandoms. Things like Doctor Who or Supernatural or Star Trek or any superhero comic tend to have unique and separate sides to them, curative and transformative. Curative fandom is about knowledge. It's about making sure that everything is lined up in order, knowing how it works and finding out which one is the best. What is Doctor Who canon? Who is the best Doctor? How do weeping angels work? Etc. etc. Curative fandom is pretty much the normal Reddit, especially R. Gallifrey. Transformative fandom is about change. Let's write fic. Let's make art. Let's make a fan vid. Let's cosplay. Let's somehow change the text. Why is 3 easier to ship while 7 is more difficult? What would happen if... Transformative fandom is more or less the norm on Tumblr and LiveJournal and Dreamwidth and fanfiction websites and dot dot dot. Here's the big thing. There's a gender split. Find a random male fan and they'll probably be in curative fandom. Pick a random transformative fandom and they'll probably be female. Note that this is phrased in a very particular way. Obviously, these guys who cosplay and write fic, obviously there's women who don't. But men tend to be in the curative fandom, while transformative fandom is predominantly women and or queer people, POC, etc. Why? Because the majority of professionally made media is catered towards a straight white male demographic, leaving little room for outsiders. Outsiders who, if they want to see themselves in media, have to attack it and change it. Hence slash fic, hence long essays claiming that Hermione Granger is black, hence canons. Edit slipped up, sorry, meant head canons, about trans characters or genderqueer characters. And then curative male fandom tends to view most things that transformative female fandom does with disdain. Why? Because in their eyes, it devalues canon. Who cares about knowing about Tony Stark's lovers if somebody's going to write a fic where Tony Stark is flying about? Their power is lessened. Scream of the Shulker is unambiguously not canon, but it doesn't have to be in order for me to read and enjoy a 30,000 fic where the robotic master was secretly in the TARDIS during 9 and 10's time and they shagged behind the scenes. Canon, no, but who gives a shit? almost there. Two more paragraphs.
Are you?
Also, as transformative fandom tends to be an outsider looking in, they're much more likely to analyse the work from a queer POC, neurodivergent gender perspective. If I came to R. Gallifrey and started to talk about how In the Forest of the Night had a questionable portrayal of mental health autism, I get blank stare. If I go on Tumblr, I get a conversation. This is also where the overreacting, shrieking SJW trope plays in. Either because of a Redditor's misunderstanding of terms and therefore assuming that a mild critique is a scathing one, or because the Tumblr user in question is young and experienced and jumping the gun. So there you have it. Our Gallifrey's bashing of Reddit is part of a larger split in how men and women tend to enjoy fandom, and are lashing against how fanfiction related things addresses fandom because it's not the right kind of fandom, and also because Tumblr's popular with teenage girls and there's nothing Reddit loves more than shitting on whatever teenage girls like. There we go.
Well, one of the first things I can think of, what about all these fan series of Star Trek?
Yeah.
They're mostly men. Yeah, so it's just a bit, it's mostly women who do all this kind of thing. Is it?
I think there's also this, kind of binary dynamic that is kind of playing with here, where it's like people either like canon and the stories as they are, or they want to transform it and be part of it. And I think
there needs to be an axis here.
Or that there seems there's no discussion about things in between.
There were one or two points I kind of agree with, like the in general media, as in media, the world media, is mostly geared towards straight white male.
Mm. Yeah.
So, if you have the situation where trans people, gay people, are people of color, anything like that, any groups like that, are going to be writing fan fiction. Because they're not represented. It's not because, women or other groups are going to be, because, Emily, you're strange, you're a niche little thing, because women are, very, very hard to animate in games, as we know from Assassin's Creed.
Oh, no, boobs are a pain in the ass.
Oh, yeah. But, it's just people will tend to want to see issues which they're having to deal with addressed in the work, and if it's not being addressed, then that's why they'll put it there. It's not because they're addressing it because they're, they're women. It's just they're people who are doing it because they're not represented.
Once more, we've actually recently seen when they actually do put in, say, for example, a black stormtrooper, or, we're going to have the Ghostbusters as all female, then, even though that's still being generated, that's still going to be canon.
Yeah.
People are complaining.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, come on, not everything, speaking as a, straight white male, not everything has to be about bloody me.
I have to say, going back to your fan film suggestion, there is something, though, that does strike me that's different about a lot of fan film productions, which do tend to be male-led. In comparison to, say, the fan fiction scene.
Yeah.
And that is that the male-led fan films tend to still be heavily preoccupied with canon. So they will find every which way possible to make sure that their little story fits somewhere within the universe of the thing that they're portraying. Whereas in fan fiction, the worry is less about that and more fulfilling something that just wasn't represented in the first place.
In a way, yeah, I can see exactly where you're coming from with that. But doesn't a lot of fan fiction, get quite nerdy about the details as well?
Can do.
Kind of. It depends.
I'd say a lot. I mean, I know that I follow a fanfiction.txt. Bot, which tweets out various terrible lines from god-awful fanfic on Twitter, and it's mostly like Sonic the fanfiction, Sonic the fanfiction, Sonic the Hedgehog fanfiction, which is just, oh god.
Yeah,
there's a little part of me that dies every time I see that.
I mean, I suppose something...
Sorry, Sonic fanfiction.
Well,
really?
I'm assuming the concern there is that some degree of furryism might be leeching in.
There's some, yeah.
Yeah,
And I've read some very strange Star Trek fan fiction.
Oh, yeah, that's just insane, really.
I mean, I think...
Oh, and also, they were written by men.
Yes. Yeah, the couple that I've read in my old lifetime were done by men. And then I stopped reading them.
Oh, God.
Yeah, they had some good... They had a few good ideas.
But I mean, it, in a way, it's kind of the age-old, if you don't like something, don't pay attention to it. And people are kind of ignoring that and basically saying, well, the equivalent of, this thing should not exist. Which is kind of discounting, you know, a whole load of, you know, creative, you know...
influences.
The transformative fandom. Which is actually a very male approach, I have to say, to you know, pretty much turn around and say, no, this doesn't exist. It seems very masculine to me.
I just find the whole idea that it's either or to be weird. And this whole idea that Tumblr has a different culture. So, I have to break it to a lot of people, you know, who are either on Chans or Reddit, but they're not the internet. They're just corners of it. Because things don't quite have the same feel as, you know, Chans or Reddit, doesn't mean they're weird in some way. It's just different to what you're used to.
Yeah.
I mean, Hell's Bells going on for years. I'm thinking back to... there were old issues, and I was never a subscriber, but I know of them. There were Star Trek fan zines that had, you know, fan fiction in them as well, written by men.
Also, this one also tends to this sort of like. You know, I mean, I kind of agree with a lot of what's been said by this redditor, but it kind of also fails to pick up on role playing. Which is kind of like an aspect of fan fiction. Obviously, you get a group of people and they just create characters and play them within a pre-existing fictional universe, but they're like replying to a thread on either a forum or even like a subreddit.
Mm. What about LARPing, like live action roleplay? Because there is obviously a lot of creative stuff involved in that with the costumes and the characters and whatnot.
Yeah, but most LARPing doesn't tend to be based off existing series
Exactly. But I mean, you still get a lot of male LARPers.
Yeah.
So I think it is also due to the perception of how malleable the geekdom is as well.
I think in ways it's more down to how accessible it is, how interesting people find it, and whether they can think of how to insert themselves into, you know, those worlds or things to do within them. It's more to do with the accessibility of that than whether there's a particular gender split or anything like that.
Though I have to admit, it tends to be men that are to criticize me for not knowing stuff about stuff that I'm into.
Oh, yeah, but that's because...
Has that happened recently?
Stupidity.
No, it hasn't, but I haven't been hanging around with many men lately.
True.
You know, it's...
So how do you really know it happened? You know, if you're criticised for something and there's another man not there, did it really happen?
There's a bear shit in the woods.
Yeah. Do we know if there's not a man to explain it to us?
I mean, I can sort of see how some, and there's definitely women that get a bit too worked up about canon as well, but I would say that they still tend to be in the minority. I think, as you're sort of saying, this is a bit too black and white. I think there is a proper sort of
spectrum
or axes
I think the main gender split that exists, you know, is more down to, it's more acceptable to be a nerd if you're male.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the main overriding things, because if you're a boy and you get obsessive and nerdy about, like, building military jet models or, you know, a certain sci-fi series, or you know, collect all the stuff about it, then that'll be, little Bob, what's it like, isn't it? Oh, boys. But, you know, if little Jin starts getting into, you know, like, Star Wars Rebels, or something like that, and, you know, gets all nerdy about it, then it will be, that's not healthy. Need to, you know, go out and, you know, diversify into ponies.
Go out and play in the sun.
I don't think it's necessarily about acceptability. I think it's about, to a certain extent, freedom, because... once again, we've got this kind of concept of boys will be boys, so we will allow them to kind of, you know, pursue whatever they want to, Meanwhile, girls, if they want to, you know, kind of play football, or if they want to do this, they want to do that, then unfortunately you've got to have non-traditional parents that will allow them to do that.
Girls tend to be criticised for having hobbies.
Yes, that's very true as well.
Have nothing to do with eventual adulthood, i.e. hobbies that are unrelated to cooking, cleaning, child rearing. If you've got hobbies outside of domestic life, in a lot of circumstances as a young kid, parents and other relatives will often try to talk you or force you out of those hobbies.
Yeah, there's a lot of money pushes that it's like, no, you shouldn't be interested in that. That, you know, that's, you know, too much of a boy's thing, or it's, you know, it's silly. But
maybe that's got actually something to do with this kind of mentality of being able to create things while just kind of just say no to the influences which say, no, you shouldn't be doing that.
It's all very complicated. It's nowhere near as simple as boys are into this and girls are into that. And, you know, there's this kind of, you know, fandom and that kind of fandom. It's like, no, all these things come into play. I can't be arsed writing fan fiction, but I understand where the urge comes from. You know, when you've been watching something, it's like, when I was at school, I was really big into Star Trek Next Generation.
Yes.
So I, you know, I had story ideas for that. And wouldn't it be cool if such and such happened? But I never sat down and wrote it. But I can understand where it comes from. But that is just where you're so into something, you just want there to be more.
Absolutely. I mean, when I was younger, I used to love designing kind of levels for like Mario games and, you know, kind of trying to design kind of games in general. I had no absolutely no ability to kind of, you know, kind of program or anything like that. I just literally had the designs and whatnot. And I think it was one of those things where I knew that I would probably never be able to get into it, because that's kind of our industry. That's kind of well outside of, you know, the kind of area that I was growing up. I would never be able to afford a computer in order to do that, blah, 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 blah. But as we're seeing now, you know, virtually anybody could, you know, kind of make games. But I still feel like I've been taught to a certain extent that video games are such a waste of time that I can't actually allow myself to design games. Well, despite the fact that it's actually an achievable goal nowadays.
Yeah, it's weird how full circle it's gone with, you know, with games, with, you know, being able to actually create it. I mean, I've said about this before, whereas in, you know, the early 80s, pretty much the entire computer industry in the UK was bedroom programmers.
Mm. Yeah.
What you would call indies now. And then it got big business, and then it sort of looped around, and the people who grew up with it only being blockbusters have suddenly go, what's going on with games? I don't like this anymore. People change games. Like, no, it's always been like this, piss off.
Absolutely. And that's another thing where people have kind of turned around, and, you know, because we've got a lot more indie games nowadays, and we're turning around and, you know, kind of making jokes about, oh, you know, we've got like PS4, which has a, you know, capabilities of rendering all this type thing, but we're using it to play video games that like 2D sprites and whatnot. As though that's a bad thing.
Yeah, I'm just thinking that all these things, which, you know, they always used to happen because I knew people who would write stories, either, you know, in their own universes or, you know, in other, you know, existing universes, you know, things they've read or watched or listened to or, you know, whatever. And the difference between now and then is that back then they would just be stuffed in a drawer or in a binder.
Yeah,
or, you know, whatever, you know, in a box somewhere.
Your diary.
Whereas now you've got the internet and you can post them up somewhere.
Mm, absolutely.
And, you know, when it comes to fan films and things like that, and fan radio dramas, which are, you know, I've heard, you know, one or two of, you didn't have the capability of doing it. I mean, pretty much everyone will have tried, you know, when you got your first tape deck or something like that. You know, recording your own voice or doing a version of a talk program or, you know, interviews or, you know, something like that. Or your own radio program putting on music that you like.
In essence, kind of transformative, you know, fandom.
Yeah, that's precise. It's the same kind of thing. It's, you know, that's something you like, so you want to do it yourself. It's easier to do it nowadays, and you can actually see more of it. Whereas before, there was just no way of communicating it apart from sending something to someone you knew. Now you can just post it up on, you know, like either fanfiction.net, which I presume is a website. Just thinking that. I have no idea if it is. But, you know, or on Tumblr or Twitter or Facebook or
wherever.
I was just going to suggest that there is a series that perhaps we could look at the fandom situation and see it from a different point of view. And that's the situation with My Little Pony and Bronies.
That's very true, yeah.
Because obviously that is a series that was created with little girls to teenage girls in mind, but which a huge chunk of male culture, a good chunk of men who have been denied those kinds of things through the regular normative upbringings that you tend to get in the West, have decided to try and embrace in order to get hold of something that traditionally has been disavowed to them.
That's the thing. There's part of me that goes, that's weird. And then there's another part of me that understands from, you know, the perspective you just put there, which is they've never had that kind of thing, you know, served up to them.
So it's almost like bronies are kind of craving a situation where the expectations of something like the man box aren't being put on them. And so that's how the transformative works of like My Little Pony tend to start out from, is allowing themselves to be in a situation that is usually denied to them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have to say, something like My Little Pony is something that I just can't know. You know, I just can't get into, or can't ever see myself getting into.
Christmas.
I'm sorry, but there you go. You can buy me a python.
There's a My Little Pony called Python. I'll get you that one.
Yeah, a real one.
I mean,
got a real My Little Pony called Python.
No,
I have to admit I've never actually, you know, kind of done any necessarily transformative, you know, kind of fandom kind of stuff myself, but I do kind of like the idea of kind of making you know, kind of cosplay outfits and whatnot. I do kind of like that. There's just something quite nice about, you know, kind of measuring it up and getting it as authentic as possible.
Oh yeah, but then you see that there's
problems with authenticity.
Well, because women then decide to do cosplay or queer people something, or people who aren't heteronormative and male and straight, try to do something with cosplay that isn't the canon of what the cosplay is actually slightly transformative, because it's a woman wearing a costume based of a male character or something.
But I mean, PhilosophyTube has had a quite good video on this concept of truth in fiction, because obviously, you know, kind of, say for example, I think the example that he used was Bruce Wayne is Batman. That's kind of a truth, but it's in fiction. But to say something like Clark Kent is Batman would be less true than saying Bruce Wayne is Batman. So there is this kind of level of truth within fiction that I think people kind of do actually get quite hard stuck on.
Well, there have to be the rules, otherwise there's... It's the whole thing of I could tell you all sorts about the USS Enterprise.
Yeah.
NCC 1701D. And some of the previous models, and, you know, the differences in capabilities and such, because I liked the rules.
But I mean, obviously, the interesting thing is that even though we've kind of got that concept of truth within fiction, we still are able to accept things like Superman. What was it, Red Son? The alternate kind of version where he kind of lands in Russia instead. We're somehow able to turn around and say, actually, that's quite a good storyline, despite the fact that isn't canon, despite the fact that, you know, it's got so many differences between you know, what Superman's previously done. We're still able to accept it, and it's like, how do you kind of define what you accept about stuff and what you don't?
Well, I was just thinking, it's arguable that speculative fiction was the origin of a lot of sci-fi.
Yeah.
So, you know, the whole idea of if you take something that's fictional anyway and then change the rules, then it's interesting. You know, it's a what if.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, by the same token, you know, I think there's been kind of cases where, like, somebody's done like a steampunk version of Iron Man. And that's...
Oh, yeah, there's steampunk comic book characters all over the shop.
Yeah.
Believe me.
And it's like, is that okay if Red Son's okay, or is that not okay? because it doesn't fit in with like anything.
If, or... and surely
if
that
done
that
a decent would be concept like behind it, it'd be all right.
Mm. Or cut if cut it's just, man.
Yeah.
I think that really. I think we're gonna have to wind it up, guys. So, okay. I believe that really is generally all we've got time for this week. So it is goodbye from.
It's good night from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net and SuperRetroid on Twitter.
It's good night from me, Paul, aka OneArmed _ Cookie on Twitter.
It's good night from me, Paul Blewett, and I'm on Twitter as at Paul Blewett.
And it's good night from me. I'm Emily King, and you can find me on Twitter at EK6891. You can check show notes for this episode over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. You can tweet us at Nerds Podcast. We're available on Stitcher and iTunes, you know, if you listen to us directly on the website and you want an alternative method. Our RSS feed is also available on there. Yeah, if you're interested. You can find us on Facebook and Google Plus as Nerds Assemble Podcast. Don't forget to check out hexdimension.com because there's cool stuff on there. Last time I checked.
Last time you checked?
Yeah, it could have changed whilst we were recording the show.
It couldn't have because we're in control.
But are you?
We are assuming direct control.
Really?
I can hear Retroid chuckling there.
Yeah.
Good night.
I know you can feel the shepherd. Good night.
Fam Shep.